This is 91.7 WVXU's Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman with Howard Wilkinson. It's July the 4th. Happy Independence Day. As our nation celebrates its 237th birthday, what better to discuss today than politics, more specifically Cincinnati politics? Five candidates filed a petition to be the city's next mayor, but only four had enough valid signatures to make the ballot. There will be a primary election on September 10th, and the top two vote-getters will face off in November. Plus, voters will select nine council members in the fall, and this time, the winners will get to serve for 4 years instead of the current two. In the studio to discuss this year's mayoral and city council races are Mac Mariani, who's an associate professor of political science at Xavier University, and on the phone is Jean Beaupre, also with Xavier, who's a political science professor. Later this hour, Howard Wilkinson will be speaking with two Ohio lawmakers from Cincinnati about the recently adopted state budget. But first, politics in Cincinnati. We are taping today's show because of the holiday, but you can participate in the conversation online at WVXU.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Mac and Jean, thanks for being here today.
Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
So we have four candidates who filed petitions to run for mayor. They are Jim Burns, John Cranley, Sandra Queen Noble, and Roxanne Qualls. Jean, let me start with you. When you hear those four names, what are your thoughts?
The reality that there, in the end, will be two, and the two will be Roxanne and John Cranley, Roxanne Qualls and John Cranley. They have the most experience, the most money, and, you know, the most savvy. But they do have to go through a primary, and that's an interesting warm-up game, if you will. I don't think either of them wants to finish second, even in the primary. So that's a big fight, and it's where they will spend a lot of money, I think, initially.
Mac, your thoughts?
I think, you know, if you look at the state of this race early on, just given the registration advantage, given the fact that Roxanne Qualls has been the top vote-getter among the city council candidates, has a great deal of support in the community, I think the real danger for Qualls going into this is complacency. I think one indication that's potentially problematic, the number of signatures that they collected for the ballot, 944, which is more than they needed out of 500 that they needed. But that's an opportunity to go out there, to start building support, to connect with voters. And it demonstrates a little bit of complacency, I think, on the part of the Qualls team. And I think that's the one thing they really have to look out for going forward, because they have a lot of the advantages when you look at money, when you look at experience, when you look at registration. But you've also got to have your team in place, because what Cranley, I think, is hoping for is a perfect storm, right? The voters who are upset about the parking issue, they're upset about some voters are upset about the streetcar, the budget issues, obviously, that are perennial, that seem to not go away. He's hoping for a perfect storm. And if you combine that with a Qualls team that isn't hitting on all cylinders, he's hoping that that'll be enough to bring him over. You know, we'll see what happens.
Does it surprise anyone that the Republican Party in this city and this county searched and searched and could not find a candidate for mayor of the city of Cincinnati? There is none on the ballot.
Right, right. I've got to say, Howard, I'm actually even more candidates in addition to Republicans that, you know, that would be strong candidates that would really have a record and the resources to run have chosen not to, but definitely on the side of the Republicans. You know, you are suggesting that they searched very hard, and I presume that they did. I think that part of that is a reflection of the fact that the Republicans run the table everywhere else but here. They own they own every elected office, administrative office at the state level. They're in control of the county, and maybe just the city, you know, they'll play with the city when they have to and don't worry about it otherwise. It would take a lot of resources to run somebody as a mayoral candidate, and maybe it's best spent elsewhere.
Well, I mean, you're looking at a city where Barack Obama won by about 3-1. I mean, it is a very Democratic city, and it's very difficult for any Republican to run head-to-head in a race like mayor with a Democrat, whether it's Roxanne Qualls or John Cranley. But now Cranley seems to be getting some support from the financial community,
right.
which
right.
gives to Republican candidates. Mac, do you find that any interesting?
Well, I think certainly one of the issues might be that if a Republican candidate, a legitimate Republican candidate, were on the ballot, that they would potentially split the vote with Cranley. And then Republicans would end up with probably with the worst of their choices. And in the case of Qualls, would probably be certainly their third choice on that list. You know, the other thing that I think you have to take into account is when the Republicans don't contest races, and this is just in terms of the party support long term, you know, what happens down the road when you have to run when the presidential candidates come in here and you don't have an organization and you don't have voters who have grown used to voting Republican? One of the keys for Barack Obama in the last election was that he did well in places where he lost. He still lost them, but he lost them by smaller margins
right.
than he could have. And if you accumulate those over the course of the entire state of Ohio, that's a fairly significant number of voters. And so by seeding the playing field here, there could be some long-term impact on the party. And you don't want to do this election after election, because then it's going to be really hard to go to those voters when presidential election time comes.
Let's talk about the Republicans. Gene, did you want to add something?
Well, I just want to make a quick comment that you know, the Republican Party has, since the election of Obama, has done a lot to say that they were trying to recruit minorities. And certainly at a city level, an African-American mayoral candidate, well-funded, might be a road for one of those people to rise up, you know, through the ranks. And that, I would have thought that might be enough of a motivator. That's all.
This idea that, I know, Howard, you wrote a column about this on our website, WVXU.org, where these Republicans who have money are looking for someone to give it to in this race. Why wouldn't they just sit on the sidelines? Why would they just not hold their money?
Well, because they want to be players, and they want to have people answer their phone calls at City Hall, specifically in the mayor's office. And many of them see John Cranley, because of his positions on the issues like the streetcar, like parking lease agreement, as more in line with them. Now, he's built sort of a coalition. You know, he has some very conservative people from a coalition opposed to additional taxes, spending and taxes, the Coast people. He has support from people like Chris Smitherman, the head of the NAACP, and a council member, and he's trying to put together this coalition of basically white Republican-leaning voters on the west side and African-American voters on the east side. Maybe, you know, Mac and Gene can talk about, where do you see Roxanne Qualls' natural constituency in this race?
You know, Roxanne, first off, she came back after being out for a number of years and was able to reestablish a constituency, which I think was remarkable in and of itself. And I think it attests to the fact that her constituency is very broad. If she has to compete with somebody on the west side of the quality candidate and home base of somebody like John Cranley, she can lose some of those votes over there that she might otherwise have got. I suspect she still has strength on the east side. I mean, I've generally characterized this race as John Cranley in broadest terms. John Cranley wins most of the west side, Roxanne wins most of the east side, and the fight for the margin probably takes place in the African-American community. And frankly, there, I think there's a struggle. I think both of them have some currency in that community, and a lot of it will be organizing and face-to-face and handshaking in the African-American community.
Gene, with Ms. Qualls, if my research was correct, the first time she was on the ballot was in 1991. And since then, she's been on, including 1991, she's been on the ballot seven times. And six of those times, she was the top vote-getter, including that lapse where you talked about, essentially from 10 years, from 1997 to 2007. How does she hold her popularity?
You know, if I knew that, I could probably get a job someplace that paid a lot more than what I'm getting paid. But
in Cincinnati, isn't that almost unheard of, though, to be that?
Well, You know, I think she had the, we always talk about somebody to do the numbers, somebody to figure out, you know, where your votes are. And she had folks that went back and tried to find what they could of her base from the first series of elections that she had. And then she must have some kind of even, I would say, bipartisan appeal that, you know, Max said that she can't become complacent, and she can't. But I don't think she will, because I think she is a kind, in a different way, kind of a handshaking, go to events person. And I think she builds her constituency sort of one voter at a time, if you will. She doesn't have any particular party block of voters. So I think she has the Roxanne Qualls voters.
We should say in 2007, Roxanne Qualls and John Cranley were both on the ballot. And on election night, I think John Cranley was the top vote getter. And after they did the official count, Roxanne was ahead by 3 votes.
Right.
So, and that wasn't necessarily a head-to-head competition.
Right.
No, right.
Well, and that's another interesting aspect of this, right, because you have going from Qualls' strength so far has been measured, at least in recent elections, has been in these 9-person races. And so what is the depth of that support across the entire city? I think we're going to probably find that out when on a one-on-one basis, how deep her support is for Qualls versus the advantage that just simply comes with name recognition or the longevity that you talk about. In a 9-person race, the fact that you've been there a long time is a huge advantage because people know you, they know your name, and they generally feel comfortable voting for you.
Do you think it matters at all which one of them finishes first in this primary?
I think it'll send a very strong signal. I think if particularly I think if Cranley wins, I think one of the challenges for him is going to be this, you know, the idea how can you overcome the natural advantages that she has, but trying to build a because part of his coalition is Republicans, like it or not, in the general election. And so if he can show that he also has a significant strength to beat Qualls in the Democratic primary, I think that will help him raise money. That will be very important.
We're discussing political races for Cincinnati mayor and city council on today's Cincinnati Edition. We'll be back after a short break. This is 91.7 WVXU. This is 91.7 WVXU's Cincinnati Edition. I'm Jay Hanselman with Howard Wilkinson. Coming up in just about 20 minutes, Howard's going to be talking with 2 Ohio lawmakers about the recently approved 2-year state budget. Right now, we're going to continue our discussion on Cincinnati politics and this fall's races for mayor and council. Our guests are Mac Mariani, who's an associate professor of political science at Xavier University, on the phone. Jean Beaupre, who's a professor of political science at Xavier. Again, we are taping today's show because of the 4th of July holiday, but you can continue the conversation online at WVXU.org, and we're also on Facebook and Twitter. We've been talking a lot about the candidates in the mayor's race. We've touched on some, but not a lot on the issues in this race. Is it fair to say that probably issue-wise, compared to these direct mayor elections since 2001, this might be the most active with people either for or against the streetcar project, and then this year those for and against whether the city should have leased out its parking facilities?
Can I weigh in on that?
Sure.
The
you know, when we talk about it in the mayor's race, it's easier to identify the candidate and relate it to the issue. When you're talking in a 9X race with the field of candidates that we have, I don't know how much emphasis there'll be, how much in the voters' minds will the issue of streetcar and the budget and those things will still be relevant. Partly a campaign does that. The difficulty is getting a voter to attach that issue to a specific candidate and remember it when they go into the voting booth. I think that's the hardest thing. And so you get some cover, if you will, when you're in a field that large. You also have a harder time taking credit.
Well, in the mayor's race, though, I mean, these are issues that are clearly attached to specific candidates.
Absolutely.
You've got John Cranley on one side of streetcar, John Cranley on one side of the parking lease agreement, and you've got Roxanne Qualls, who has supported both. So that's very clear.
Right.
Would Roxanne been in a stronger position if more construction was actually underway on the streetcar project? Besides, there's been some utility relocation, but it's hard to say that a streetcar is going to go here, at least right now.
Yes, I think it might have helped at some point, but you go into some of the neighborhoods, particularly on the west side, and they look at the streetcar project, and they say, well, what's in this for me?
Yeah.
What does this mean for me? Why are we spending all this money? I'll never use this. And that's the issue that John Cranley can run on.
Well, and in some regards, this is one of the reasons why the streetcar almost has to move forward from the perspective of its supporters. You know, you're kind of already in so deep that if the most recent vote, for instance, if they had pulled funding for the streetcar, they would have faced as candidates the worst of both worlds, right? They would have had the people who supported the streetcar angry, and they wouldn't have gained any ground with the people who would have been angry for wasting all the money on the streetcar. So you run into this problem that every time we turn a corner, there's a bigger check and there's another pot of money that needs to come out.
So you have to be all in.
You have to be all in because there's really no turning back at this point. For at least politically, it's become very difficult to extricate themselves from it.
Gene, you made a point about the field races, how much more difficult it is to try to focus in on these candidates on these particular issues. Do you see any possibility of possibly third parties coming in and spending money to run ads, do mailers or whatever, criticizing individual candidates, incumbents who have supported these projects?
Well, you know, Howard, you've written on that, and there is some movement around that is, I guess, originates on the west side with Pete Whitty and some other folks, and the people who appear to be interested in doing what you're describing, which is attaching an issue in either a positive or most likely in a negative way with somebody in that field, has more behind it this time than I can remember, partly because of the people who are doing it, who are politically smart and know how to do that stuff. Secondly, I think that they're raising money to do it, which generally speaking, people don't have to run negative campaigns in a city council race. And I think thirdly, they're reaching into areas, bipartisan, bi-geographic areas. They're going on both sides of the city to get support for this. Having said all that, man, it's a lot to ask a voter. I'm not sure how you do that. You almost have to put something in a voter's hand or give it to them when they ask for their sample or for their ballot at home, you know, because it's a leap for them to keep all that together and go in and face that number of candidates in the council race on a ballot.
Right, and direct mail is one of the best ways of doing that.
It is, but it has to be timed well, I think. They're not going to save that piece of direct mail, you know, for 3 weeks before the election, I think.
And this is where groups like unions, I think, have a major advantage because they can put people on the field in the weekend before the election and on election day in ways that other third parties that are just kind of shell, you know, they have money, but they don't have personnel. It's very, I think Gene's right, it's very difficult to get voters to connect it to multiple, especially to multiple candidates. It just gets so diffused and voters just kind of tune out.
And we're asking people, we're asking voters to not vote for somebody in that instance. That's a pretty unusual thing. Or we're picking people that we think are on the cusp. They would be picking people that they think are on the cusp that if they threw their support behind them would knock off somebody from 2 years ago.
Right. Council races, which are field races, have always been about vote for me and not vote right. against somebody else.
One thing we were talking about with a primary on September 10th. Now that's an open primary, so you don't have to vote strictly for a Democrat. Republicans wouldn't have anyone to vote for. It's vote for your top selection to move on to be one of the two in November, correct?
Right. There's no party designations on the ballot. You know, it's a nonpartisan election, obviously. You know, you've got two Democrats. You have a Libertarian who has asked for the Republican endorsement, but the Republican Party has ignored him. And then you have an independent candidate. But no, there's no party designations, and you know you're just going in and you're picking the top two. And we don't have a long history in these direct elections of mayor, but you go back to 2001 and 2005, the candidate who won the primary did not win the general election. But those were cases where you had larger fields of mayoral candidates. You know, you had more than four.
Yeah, and this is really a two-person race.
And depending on who's one or two, does that change their strategy then come September the 11th? Do they adjust?
Strategy relative to what? If I'm raising
winning money, winning in November.
Well, the first thing that I think they'll do is use it to try and raise money. And if you're a few points behind or more than a few points behind, you know, you'll go shake the tree and say, I need money because, you know, I'm your candidate and I need to get past this. If you're on top, you shake the tree and say, you know, I'm the guy or the person in front and, you know, you want to back a winner.
And I think here it's really a test of the kind of organization on the first hand and also voter anger, right? And this is how motivated are voters to go out and send a message in a primary? Typically, it's obviously a much smaller group of people to begin with. So you're going to get people who are more motivated to vote for one reason or another. I would think Cranley is going to hope to kind of stoke that fire. And I think again, as Gene said, money is really what it's about. If you demonstrate a strong showing in that primary election, that's going to help you. It's going to give you a nice talking point to go into somebody and say, listen, I've got good organization. I've got good support. People are angry. This is an opportunity. Particularly important for Cranley because he's the underdog in the race.
Yeah, and Mac makes a good point that this is probably going to be a very low turnout primary, and you believe that gives Cranley the advantage based on the issues.
It can, although, you know, I think that he's probably doesn't have the same level of organization that Qualls does. And I think this, so it's kind of a test versus her organization versus his ability to pull people out because they're upset about parking or the streetcar or other issues like that.
You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU and 88.5 WMUB. We're discussing Cincinnati politics and this fall's races for mayor and council. We've talked about the mayor's race, mixed in a little about the council race, but let's go ahead and shift over to the council race. In the mayor's race, we know who the candidates are going to be because they had to file by the end of June. Council candidates actually have until August to file their paperwork, but we have a pretty good sense of the field. All the incumbents are seeking re-election, several newcomers. Howard, let me start with you. You know who the incumbents are. You know some of the newcomers. What do you think of what's your take on the field so far?
Well, we know one thing for sure. There's an open seat because Roxanne Qualls is running for mayor. So there is going to be at least one new council member. And it is going to be a mad scramble to pick up, you know, that seat. And maybe one or two more, you know, depending on how this goes. Gene, you've been around a long time, and obviously this year the Democratic Party has endorsed 10 candidates, and you can only vote for 9, and that was because David Mann made this last-minute push to get an endorsement from the Democratic Party. Is this going to be any kind of factor, do you think? Is this going to confuse voters when they look at sample ballots?
I think that's a good question, Howard. And, you know, we could probably talk for the remainder of the time just about what it means to endorse 10 as yeah. opposed to 9 when you can only vote for 9, what that means in terms of the health of the parties. But I think it's I think in a council race, party identification is already somewhat reduced because of it being a field race and the number of candidates and all that sort of thing. And you know, you'll stray maybe from your party, the sample ballot your party gives you, whether it has 10 or 9 on it or however many, just because you know some of these people, you know, and they're, it's easy to, you've got 9 votes or however many you choose to use. So I think party affiliation is less of an issue. There was a time, I don't think this is one of them, when party affiliation meant resources to the candidates. But when you've got a field this big, you know, you can't give all your endorsed candidates money. About the most you can give them is to be on the sample ballot, to give them some organization, you know, that you might have, precinct workers, some affiliation with organizations like unions that might get out and help. But you probably go around talking about your party affiliation, depending on where you happen to be standing geographically at the moment. But I, you know, beyond that, I don't think it does provide you a whole lot.
Well, the fact is, I mean, I've been around these elections for, you know, about 30 years now, and it's consistent in council elections that the average voter votes for about 6.5 candidates.
Right.
Nobody right. votes, you know, most people do not vote for 9 anyway.
Right.
And
right.
we could have a discussion about how you vote for a half a candidate, but we'll save we'll save that for another program.
Mac, this is math.
Howard and Gene of Wade, what do you think about the field?
You know, I think the discussion about parties, I think, is interesting. I was went on Mike Murawski's website the other night, and he's got, you know, basically endorsements from some of the Democratic council people, right? So this tells you party is so different. Could you imagine, you know, you have a Democratic council people who are standing with an independent candidate who potentially could siphon off votes away from other Democratic candidates. Sure. So it's a very different way to run an election. I think it's hard for newcomers to break in to a citywide race. I mean, I think it's difficult. It takes a significant amount of resources, a significant amount of time. If you have a full-time job somewhere, you should probably take some long time off, because in order to get your name out there, in order to actually work those districts, you've got to be taking the time to do it. I think the people on the bottom, you look at the last election, 8 and 9 were Smitherman and Seelbach. Seelbach coming in at the 9th spot, and those two have, I think, clearly worked very hard over the last several years. You see them in the media. You see them working, raising issues. Both of them, I think, have increased their profile even more. Certainly, Smitherman was already known, but even more so this last 2 years. So that's going to put pressure, I think, on the other two, which Yvette Simpson and Laura Quinlivan, who came in at 6 and 7. I think there's going to be and then you have two other Democratic candidates who are going to be very strong: David Mann, Greg Landsman. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. That fight for those last 4 spots, I think, is going to be quite interesting to see play out.
I'll ask this question, and whoever wants to jump in. Is Councilmember Quinlivan running into problems because there were union endorsements, and she clearly was not endorsed by at least a couple of major unions? And in one case, they only endorsed 8 candidates. They'd endorsed her, they would have had 9.
Right. Well, yeah, she's had some problems, and I think it has mostly to do with the influence of the firefighters union, because she was the council member who was talking about, why don't we look at making significant cuts in public safety? And of course, that did not go over very well with the firefighters. They have a lot of influence in the Cincinnati AFL-CIO Labor Council, and they were able to keep her from getting an endorsement.
I think Quinlivan, I think, who's very well known, obviously, from her time in the media, mm-hmm. I think that she has made a calculated risk, right? She said, I'm going to be honest with people about the situation facing the city of Cincinnati, and the voters can handle that. And I think, to some extent, that's part of a test, I guess, this election. We'll see how well honesty plays. Cincinnati's lost 23% of its population in the last 2 decades. 23% fewer people, but there's not 23% fewer roads, not 23% fewer costs associated with pensions. Everything else has stayed the same or grown. And so the challenge for Cincinnati, with a smaller tax base than they used to have in terms of people at least, how do you right-size the city government, particularly given that you have nearly $1 billion in pension liabilities floating out there that you have to pay? Those are big issues to deal with. At some point in time, all of those things have to be on the table, I think, budget-wise, and I think Quinlivan's probably the first person to recognize that.
Gene, let me put this question to you. Will people, voters, care that now they're electing council members for a four-year term? Will that be something that they give extra consideration to, or they're still going to vote the way they would if it was still just a two-year term?
Boy, that really is a good question. It's funny, even as I think about the race, I tend to forget about that, you know, when you get into the nitty-gritty. And I suspect that there will be some people that will remind voters of the importance of choosing whoever the candidate is they're trying to promote. But I'm listening to the discussion as it goes, and you know, maybe I'm old school, but in the end, I think in a 9X race, it comes down to name recognition. And I think about Ms. Quinlivan, and, you know, there are probably people who would disagree with her but will vote for her just because they remember her name from being, you know, in the media. The problem is the media cannot cover a 9X race. Print can some. And radio can some, but the TV media can't cover an INX race very well because you can't go to the field of candidates and ask them all to respond to a question. So it's very hard to get name recognition. And as I say, when a voter goes in there, you know, they're in a hurry, they got to get to work, they got to go pick up the kids, whatever it is, they run down that list and they look for names that they recognize. And they equate recognition with approval, and they tend to vote for them. And Howard's right. It's 6.5, less in lower income communities. And, you know, so in the end, if I'm running, I guess I'm happy if they spelled my name right and got my picture in, almost regardless of what they say about me.
Howard, when I asked that question, you gave me a look.
Well, no, I mean, you know, as a first-time candidate, I mean, you can break through. It's happened in recent years, but you have to have enormous resources and have to be able to raise a whole lot of money. Some years ago, David Pepper did it. 2 years ago, P.G. Sittenfeld did it. But they were able to get an enormous amount of money, get some name recognition, and were running at the right time when there was a mood for change on city council. Some people look at Greg Landsman, the Democratic candidate, as a potentially somebody like P.G. Sittenfeld who can raise a whole lot of money and possibly break through. We'll see how that goes. But Gene is right. There is the factor of name recognition here, and that is the bottom line.
Gentlemen, it doesn't seem possible, but we are out of time. Our first conversation about political races this fall, but I'm sure it will not be the last. Gene and Mac, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We've been discussing the political races this fall in Cincinnati for mayor and city council. Our guests were Mac Mariani, an associate professor of political science at Xavier University, and on the phone, Gene Beaupre, also with Xavier, a political science instructor. Coming up, Howard will be interviewing Ohio State Representatives Peter Stoutberg and Denise Driehaus about the new two-year state budget. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.